So with that, we today will look at the final four verses that we find in chapter 4 of the book of James. So James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17 is what we'll be looking at today as we wrap up and finish chapter 4, in which we actually spent 6 of the last Sundays walking through what James has to tell us and what James has to exhort us in. So let's go ahead and read that passage. James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17 says the following: "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen to you tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, 'If the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that.' But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." So as I mentioned, this is the sixth chapter. This is the sixth time that we find ourselves in this chapter. And as we wrap it up, we come to this passage, this paragraph here, that also seems to be a little bit disjointed and out of place. Why? Because when we began this chapter, remember that James told us and talked about friendship with the world and where conflicts come from. And he denounced that in the first 6 verses of this chapter. Then he told us what a Christian, or how a Christian responds to true saving grace. That's found in verses 7 through 10. And then at the end of that, remember, he ends that section in verse 10 by saying that humble yourself in the sight of the Lord and he will lift you up. So a Christian response is to humble ourselves in front of the Lord, and he's the one that will lift you up. Then last Sunday we focused on verses 11 through 12, where a person who's not humble, we saw and studied that not a humble person, one of the characteristics that that person has is to speak evil of others. We learned and talked about that. And today, we come to the passage where James tells us and admonishes those that have a do-it-yourself type of an approach. And I would submit to you that how does it relate to the prior passage and the prior section of this chapter? Is that if you think back to verse 10, where James talks about the humble person, that if someone is humble, he will submit to the Lord in every single aspect, in every single way of his life, including when plans are made for tomorrow. But a person that's not humble, clearly, will plan and do things of himself and not consider God's will. So with that, let's look a little bit closely at these four verses. Verses, again, 13 through 17. And I wanted to highlight for us 5 things that I think are clear that we can glean and apply to our lives. But before we do that, as we read this passage again, you see that it's talking about individuals that plan for tomorrow. Now, planning for tomorrow is not bad. Planning, especially if you remember the book of Proverbs, Solomon talks a lot about wisdom and planning for tomorrow, that has to happen. But here, however, the distinction is that it's the plans for tomorrow without God. So if you read actually what some theologians say when they comment on this particular verse, one, for example, John MacArthur says the following, that this particular passage, in it, James does not condemn wise business planning, but rather planning that leaves out God. That people that do so depict in themselves that they are practical atheists. What does that mean? That means that they're living lives and making their own plans and decisions as if God did not exist. Such conduct is obviously inconsistent with the genuine saving faith of which James talks about in verse 7 of the current chapter, where he tells us to submit to God, as well as throughout the entire book that he writes us, as well as throughout all of the gospel that he writes. So what are the five things that I want us to glean from this passage where James tells us, come, those of you that think and that say that tomorrow we will go to such and such place, to that city, we will spend a year there, buy and sell over there. What does he want us now, 2,000 years later or so, glean from it? Well, first thing that I want us to glean and learn from this passage is that this self-sufficient approach that's being described here. So the first thing I want us to notice is that James describes the self-sufficient approach in verse 13. If you read it again, he's describing an approach where a person is thinking about a future. A person is thinking and planning out his or her life and is planning out what the activities will look like over the next year or next subsequent X amount of time. It doesn't matter what the time will be. And as you note, in the self-sufficient approach that's being described here in verse 13 and 14, the person is considering the steps and considering what he or she will do, but obviously there's no mention of God. So the first thing that I want us to notice is that in this self-sufficient approach that James is describing in all of your Bibles, if you look, there are a couple of words that come before the description of that approach. In my Bible, for example, it says, come now. In your Bible, it might say something slightly different. But what is the implication of that phrase, come now? Perhaps when you're talking to your friends and somebody describes something to you and you tell them, are you serious? Or come now? Or something else. What's the implication of that term? The implication, obviously, is of disapproval. That first of all, James is not approving. He's frankly disapproving the self-sufficient approach. That's the first takeaway that I want us to note. Well, why is he disapproving the self-sufficient approach? Why is he disapproving? Should be a question for us. That's the second thing that I want us to note. And if you care as to why he is disapproving the self-sufficient approach where people just plan for life and think that they're going to do this, this, and that tomorrow, he answers that question in verse 14. He disapproves, or he says the problem with that self-sufficient approach is twofold. Number one, look in verse 14, he says, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. So the second takeaway is, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. That's the problem with that approach. None of us know what's going to happen tomorrow. If you look at Proverbs 27:1, it says, don't boast about tomorrow, for you don't know what a day might bring forth. Also, if you think of other passages in the scriptures, remember, there was even a passage that Jesus himself spoke about, a parable, so to say, which is written in Luke 12:16-21. It was a parable of the rich fool, a person that made a lot of money back in that day, person that had a phenomenal harvest, and he said to himself in his own heart that he was going to put it all away, and now he was going to be eating, drinking, and being merry. And when Christ told that story of that parable of the rich fool, he said, but God said with respect to that person, he said, fool. Fool. Why? Because he said, this night your soul will be required or taken from you. So the point is that James is telling us here is that the problem with that self-sufficient approach that so many people are taking, even within the churches, when they're planning for tomorrow, for their education, for their jobs, for their houses, is that you do not know what will happen tomorrow. Only God does. If you look at Isaiah 46:9-10, it says, I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning. So only God knows what will happen. That's one of the reasons that's the problem with that approach. The second problem with a self-sufficient approach that James also tells us in verse 14 is following in the next statement. Look, he says, for what is your life? Question mark. And he goes on and he answers it immediately. He says, it is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then it vanishes away. So the second problem with that self-sufficient approach for all of us, perhaps for you, if you're planning for tomorrow to live in a specific manner, is that James tells us, well, what is your life? It is like a vapor, like a breath. Some of us are planning to go to the snow very soon. And if you recall, when you're in the snow, you breathe and you see the vapor just for a second and then it disappears. And James here tells us that it's just like that. And there are so many other passages in the Bible that also compare life to vapor. So what's the point of that? The point is, if you think of even perhaps your grandparents, or maybe go back just a little bit further, think of your great grandparents. Do you know or remember who they are? Perhaps you might know them by name. Do you know anything about them? Highly unlikely. And that's only three generations removed. But what if you went back a little bit further? Let's say great, 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 great grandfather. The chances are that none of you here remember anything about your own ancestors, right? I certainly don't. Perhaps maybe some of you do. And think about that. There were millions, billions of people on this earth for generations since the beginning that came, lived, had the same types of problems maybe that you have, had the same passions that you had, had the same worries, had children, and now nobody remembers them. It's like they were never here on this earth from a human perspective. So what James is trying to tell us is that that's going to be us. You know, another decade will come, we'll be old. Perhaps people will not necessarily want to go and visit you in your 90s and they'll think it's depressing. But don't even think of that. In another decade or other century or so that will go by, likely folks won't even remember who you were and what issues you had and what problems or passions that you had perhaps. Therefore, James is reminding us of that particular issue. And he tells us, for what is your life? It will come and it will go. And the only importance that it has is what you invest into the spiritual realm. What you invest into your relationship with God, because that is the only thing that will survive. It will pass. We will be forgotten. You will be forgotten. Just like those billions of people that we just thought about. You will be forgotten, but the only thing that will survive is your investment in your relationship with God. Your, what did you do for God? Because only those, as it says, deeds will survive. So James, the second, again, what's the problem with a self-sufficient approach? If you go back to verse 1, there's two problems to quickly recap. The first problem is he tells us, you don't know what tomorrow is going to be like. The second problem with a self-sufficient approach is, as James tells us, what is your life? Our existence is very transient here on this earth. Thirdly, what can we learn from this passage is in verse 15. What is the correct approach when James describes our actions and planning for the future? What is the correct approach? Look in verse 15. He lays it out very clearly for us. He says, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. That is an approach or a recipe of a truly humble person. It's not that the person, the Christian person or the humble person, does not plan for anything, that that person just sits here doing nothing. No. The Christian person plans and thinks of the future, but look at the subordination to God's will. First and foremost, there's an acknowledgement of Lord's will and Lord's presence, that if it is Lord's will, then yes, we will go here or there. We will participate in commerce. We will plan our life here. That's the third thing for us to learn. And fourthly, James, if you go to the next verse, in verse 16, he goes back and reminds the reader of what they're doing, because they're not executing this perfect recipe that's described in verse 15. He tells it, but now you... Who are the you? You are the ones that are planning without considering God. He says, you are boasting in your arrogance. And furthermore, James says that all such boasting is evil. So James defines arrogance, or at least one aspect of arrogance here, by telling us here that plans for the future that don't acknowledge God, that don't give him the first priority, number one, is being arrogant, and number two, all such arrogance, lifting ourselves up above God is evil, as he says here. So again, as we wrap up, what are the four things that we learn from here? First, in verse 13, the description of the self-sufficient approach. How does this apply to us, or to you, perhaps, in your life? To me, in my life? As I reflect, do I see myself? Do you see yourself in that description? When I think of the future, when you think of the future, when you consider your next steps, is the self-sufficient approach where you find yourself? Or are you asking God and giving the first priority to Him? That's the first thing that we learn. Second, what's the problem with that self-sufficient approach? If you do find yourself in the category, as we just learned, it's because we have no idea what tomorrow will look like, number one. And number two, our life is so temporary that whatever we do here will be for very, very soon forgotten. And only the investment and the focus on the eternal is what's going to follow us into the next life. Three, the third thing that we learn is actually, if we do find ourselves in the first category that we're not thinking and not giving God priority, verse 15 outlines for us the specific and the exact response of a Christian person who finds himself in this predicament. What is it? It is to give God the priority. It is to plan, but only if it is God's will. And then fourthly, as we just learned in verse 16, that it is evil, it is arrogance not to give God the priority and to submit to His will in His plans. So as we wrap up, note verse 17 on which James ends. And this verse 17 is applicable to the prior three verses that we just read. And frankly, it's applicable to the entire chapter, chapter 4, and the entire book. And it's applicable to chapter 5 that follows. It's a nice segue. And you probably have heard and read this verse, and it's probably called, as you might know, the Good Samaritan Rule, or the Good Samaritan Verse. Look at what it says. He says, therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. To him it is sin. So in this chapter, James talked and taught us much about a few different things, as we just already read, about conflict, about speaking of others, about here now most recently, as we just learned today, about how to give God priority in everything, including our planning, including on planning with work, with school, or with everything in life, period. And as we've learned that, we come to the end, James pauses and says that to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. So he reminds us, Christians, the readers, that I've been just teaching you over the course of the last four chapters, I've been outlining how the world response in all these different situations, and we just talked about just a handful that we see here in chapter 4, and prior chapters have all the different situations, such as tongue and treating people with favoritism, and a bunch of other ones in the prior chapters, how to read the scriptures and so forth and so on. And here he pauses and tells us, I've been teaching you all of these behaviors, so to say, or I've been telling you how a true Christian responds in the face of these different conflicts. And he says, to him who does know the truth but doesn't do it, to him it is a sin, reminding us that it is a serious matter, reminding us that now that we know our responsibility and what God and James expects of us is that we are to do what we know. Otherwise, it is a sin. Amen.